Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we step inside the vibrant, paint-splattered, and high-energy worlds of the artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create. We'll also meet special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their field. From our creative corner to yours, we're inviting you into inspiring conversations with exceptional women. I'm Susan Harold, Editor-in-Chief of Women Create. Join me as we sit down with visionary makers and innovative entrepreneurs to explore the beautiful chaos of the creative life, the trials that test us, the triumphs that fuel us, and the surprising paths that lead to those undeniable creative sparks. Thank you for being a part of our creative world, the world of Women Create.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in. Today, I would love for you to meet Lori Mason. Lori is a textile artist, writer, and founder of Lori Mason Design in Portland, Oregon. For more than 30 years, she has created custom quilts and textile art from meaningful clothing and fabrics, helping people commemorate life's most important milestones, from births, weddings, graduations, and retirements to honoring the memory of loved ones who have passed. Lori, welcome. It's so nice to meet you. I know we've chatted via email many times, but this is the first time that we're actually having a verbal discussion and chat. So welcome in.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I would love us to start out exploring sort of like your background with Nike and how you got started, because I know a lot of times artists start with an artistic background and some don't start with any artistic background. And I always find that so compelling and so interesting. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it actually, early on, I on purpose didn't want to go to art school because my mom and my grandmother were both artists. And I thought I can't start out doing that. So I ended up going to for a couple of years to a liberal arts college here in Portland. But then I decided art was my calling. And so I went to an art and craft college here in Portland. Right after that, I went to the Fashion Institute of Technology for textile design for industry. And then from there, I got myself to Nike because I was from Portland and I wanted to move back to Portland. So I worked there for a few years and doing textile design for different sport categories. It was a really exciting place to be. I learned an incredible amount from my colleagues and from all of the, this was right when, you know, certainly for me, I was learning new design programs. I had to learn three different programs on the fly right when I got there. But in the end, it felt like I had more creativity in different areas that I wanted to explore. And so I sort of took that knowledge and took that knowledge of how to make patterns and my love of math into my own work. So yeah.
I don't hear a lot of artists tell me they love math.
I do love math. A lot of my work is simple math, but it is mathematic, and I'm really interested in patterning and how it moves across a piece. So yeah,
that's super interesting. So you left Nike, and is that when you sort of started working on the quilts, or was there something in between?
No, I had been developing a line of modern designs for quilts in doing unconventional fabrics at the time. So I went to LA and looked at all the fabrics there, the jobbers, the, you know, one-off pieces that are left over from the mill ends, and had a bunch of fabric shipped up to Portland. So wool suiting is what I was focused on. I really loved the look of menswear and wool suiting. So I was making these very modern quilts out of wool suiting and also linen.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very unique. Very cool. And then you kind of mentioned in our earlier discussions that you felt like the quilts were more of like your heart work. So tell me a little bit about that transition to working primarily with, you know, memory quilts.
It all kind of happened sort of simultaneously. So as I was beginning to do the sort of modern quilt work and I was doing national craft shows, that kind of thing, I was asked by a very close friend of mine to make a memorial quilt out of her father's ties. Her father had passed away, and the only thing that she received from her father's estate, very sad, was this bag of ties. And she knew that I had been making quilts, and so she asked if I could make something with that, and I did. And the process of that and understanding how I would say just emotionally intense and how I was really giving back to somebody I knew was really powerful for me. And not long after that, my grandmother passed away, who was very important in my life. And I made a series of quilts with her clothing, knowing from this past experience how amazing that was. And that from there, I mean, it's slow, right? So you do one, you do the next, then you sort of put it out there on my website and referrals and that type of thing. And all the while that I was sort of starting to make more and more of these memorial quilts for people, I was also designing textiles. I was licensing my work to some fabric companies, one in LA and one in New York for the quilting industry. And so I sort of had these parallel lives, I guess, for within my profession. And at one point, I realized I needed to pick one or the other. And the textile design, ever since Nike, I will say, it was always a bit of a struggle for me. Not the designing part, but the marketing or the matching what was commercially viable versus what I wanted to make. And so when it came time, when I started to make more and more of these memorial quilts, it just felt like I was connecting with people and I loved the one-on-one interactions I had with my clients. And it was about grief and feelings and my interpretation of their stories. And I had also been working on trying to figure out whether I should have a consultant for my textile designs. And I did all this work and I was just getting nothing in return. And it's like the universe talking to you.
Yes, totally, exactly. Ended up being that the thing you were most interested in and enjoyed the most ended up being the thing that you were most successful with. Not that you weren't successful with the other things, but it just flowed together a little bit easier, it sounds like.
I was completely confident in that work. I think a lot of it has to do with our own sense of ourself and what we're bringing to the work and how successful we feel just in what we're doing and how we're helping the world, what I was contributing to the world. I felt like this was a way I could really give to people, work with my own set of skills that a lot of it was intuition, right? Like how relate to people, and it seemed to really work for people. It seemed to work for me, and I had have a lot of confidence. I never, after the first few, I never really questioned my creative decisions, and I was always questioning my creative decisions in the textile design.
I can relate to that in a slightly different way, but it's almost like you go from having like a big boss, like at Nike or even like with textile design or someone you're trying to please, and then you go to having like this one individual who feels much less like a boss. She's just a client that you're trying to make them happy, but it's not that sort of like seeking approval and that you would have in more of a corporate job. So I can see how that probably just was a lot easier for you and a lot more enjoyable probably.
Exactly. I mean, doing this work is so rewarding because I'm working with somebody's special fabrics. It's so emotional. There's so much there. And when I finally make the quilt and send it back, I mean, all I get are people's like, thank you so much. And this is so amazing. And I feel my person. And it's like a great cycle, right? It makes me want to do the next one.
Very rewarding, I would imagine. Well, and I know that you've had your work exhibited at the Smithsonian Craft Show, at the Philadelphia Museum of Art Craft Show, but one of the stories I really want to hear about is, and I'm sure our audience wants to hear about, is the connection between your What Women Create story that you did back in 2021, and then your latest feature, which is actually in our current What Women Create summer quilting issue. A woman named Trisha reached out to you, and I just find this story so interesting. When you told me about this, I really knew that we had to include it in the magazine. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so when the article came out in 2021, wow, it was amazing to be in print and to see my work and to tell that quilt story. And I think a week after it came out, I got an email from a woman named Trisha, and she said, I don't normally get the magazine. I have in the past, but something made me pick it up and I looked and saw your work and oh my gosh. And I tore it out and I don't tell them I tore it out of the
We don't
magazine.
care, Trisha.
Exactly. And
It's
I put it in my file and you will hear from me one day. And I wrote back and I said, thank you very much. And that was that. And fast forward 5 years. And here I get an email from Trisha. Hi, this is Trisha. I don't know if you remember me. Of course, I remember you. And my husband just passed, and I would love to have a quilt. And so it was, I don't know, it was just so wonderful to hear from her,
Right.
know that she had been thinking about the work, to know that she had not been ready, but now she was ready, which is very common in the work that I do. Lots of people, as soon as their loved one passes, some people are ready the next day. Literally, I've gotten calls from people like the next week.
Oh, really? Okay.
So Trisha and I, we just dove right in and she told me about Alan, her husband, and what his work life was, what he loved to do and where he was from, and that they loved going to these football games at Oklahoma University. And yeah, so we just worked back and forth with the design and decided at one point that there were too many stories for just the quilt
For
top.
one quilt.
Yeah. And so I said, it sounds like there were really two sides to Alan, and maybe we should do a double-sided quilt.
Well, what's interesting too, and what really shines in your article from 2021, and then also in this current article, is the way you come across. I mean, people have to trust you with these very precious garments of theirs and have to feel like they're putting them in hands that are not only safe, but who really will understand how important they are. And I don't know how that comes through in the pages, but it really, really does. And obviously, meeting you here today, it's even more evident. But I would imagine that that's a big piece of it is when you're speaking with these people on the phone and starting their project, there's this sense of calm that you give them and this sense of trust and that you really care to hear about the story. And it's not just a business, it's not just let's put these together and you make it seem more about the love behind the quilt. And I
Yeah.
really appreciate that.
Well, I think that what my whole way of working and way of coming up with designs and that is integral to the stories that people tell me about their loved one. And so much of my work is done long distance. Often I never meet the people in person, but it is so important for me to talk to them on the phone to make them understand that I'm a person, that I'm listening. That I have lots of experience doing this work, lots of experience taking care of these fabrics for people, transforming them into this new vision of what they can remember about their person. And that is crucial because I think so many times today we're just, clicking and going on through the internet, and it's really hard to trust. It's really hard to trust.
It is. And you, like I said, you really emit that just very quickly in meeting you and speaking with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. So that was my favorite quilt story. Do you have any other quilt stories that you want to share with us?
Oh, I have a ton. Let's see. Well, they all sort of have their own flavor. Let's see, a few years ago, I made a lovely series of quilts for a family. Most of the time, the quilts I make are from an individual who has passed away, but this was two brothers who had passed away within 4 years of each other. And their daughters, who were cousins, decided to have these quilts made for them, one for each of them. And they were two brothers who were from Mexico who loved horseback riding together. And they always would wear these bandanas and while they were riding. And Fernando wore these colorful, super colorful bandanas, like pink and purple and orange and red. And his brother was much more conservative. And so I got these two sets of bandanas plus some shirts and things and made very different quilts with these two separate feelings. And so a lot of times I will do quilts that are for multiple family members or even when there's multiple people who have passed away. But it was so great to work with these different
Personalities, really.
personalities. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the one for Fernando was yellow and purple, and then the other one was much much more formal and very minimal and beautiful. So that was
Yeah, I
great.
love that you want to capture their persona within the quilt. You know, it's not a one size fits all.
A lot of times sort of things happen, you get kind of woo-woo, especially when people have passed away and there's, spirits involved. I have a series that I'm working on just aside from my memorial quilt work where I'm focused on tartans and reinterpreting tartan patterns into quilts, zooming in or zooming out or creating tartans out of plaid fabric usually. And I had one hanging in my studio when a client walked in who was from Portland. And her husband had passed away. And these tartans have a name. They're usually based on a clan. So, the whatever McMinion clan or the Thomas clan or whatever. So I had one on my wall and I'd forgotten what the clan name was. And she walked in and she said, "I just don't know what to do for Charlie." And I said, "Well, what about, something sort of modern, I know." And she said, she looked at the quilt and she's like, "Well, kind of like that one." And I said, "Oh, well, that's a tartan clan." And she's like, "Oh, well, yeah, he had Scottish background." And I said, "Well, let me look up the name of it." And I said, "Oh, it's the Cameron tartan." And we looked at each other because their last name was Cameron.
Oh my gosh. So
And
that, oh
she was
my
like,
gosh.
"I have goosebumps. Oh my gosh, Charlie's here." And so,
Oh
well, I guess that's it. And so I ended up making like four of them, different, same pattern, but different
Oh.
fabrics for
I
her.
mean, that is crazy.
Yeah.
That is a
So,
very cool story. Oh my gosh. You must have both been very shocked. So you mentioned these other tartan quilts that you're working on. Are there any other projects that you're busy with?
that's keeping busy. Actually, a big project I'm working on right now is for a family in Germany, and it's kind of an exciting project because it's like a combination of memorial quilt and I would say Swedish death cleaning. Because I was approached by a woman who in Germany who'd seen my work, and she said, "I've gone through my closets and I have my clothes and my children's clothes and my grandmother who had passed away, her scarves and everything." She said, "I would like a series of quilts made. I don't really know yet what I'm thinking." So I said, "Why don't you send me everything?" So she sent me these five, six huge boxes of clothes, like
Oh my
ribbon.
gosh.
And so we got on the phone and I said, "Well, what are you thinking?"
Because that's a
"Well,
lot.
I'm thinking maybe because it's, I need something to grab onto, right?" She's like, "I'm thinking the four seasons. Let's do something with the four seasons." I said, "Okay, great." So I'm not finished with this project. I've done half the quilts. I've done winter and spring, and I'm working on summer right now. But I basically divided all the fabric into what I felt like were sort of seasonal groupings in terms of the color. And then came up with four different designs for four wall pieces for her.
Wow.
And yeah, it's been amazing. There was so much fabric to go through. It takes me days to just lay it out and combine it and think about how, it will, go across the quilt design that I've.
Can appear cohesive, but like a common thread basically through the whole
The
quilt.
thing that happened too was that there was so much fat. There is so much fabric. And when I did winter was, it's on my website. It's called Judith's Winter. She wanted a like 24 inch by like a horizontal, like really long and narrow horizontal. So it's like 60 inches by 24 inches. Well, there was lots of fabric left over, a ton of fabric left over. And she said, "Well, what are you going to do with it?" I said, "Well, usually I recycle it or I send it to Goodwill or charity." And she said, "Well, I don't want you to waste it." I said, "Well," she said, "can you make me a bit, can you just put together the pieces? I don't care willy-nilly." So for each season, I do one wall piece now and then a large, like king size, Euro king size quilt that's two-sided because there's
Oh
so much
my
fabric.
gosh.
But those pieces, I'm sort of, she said, "Keep the pieces big, work, just intuitively." So sometimes I don't even have a design. I just start with a big piece and I look and see what's left. And it's just sort of create as you go. And that's been really, really fun for me.
Well, that gives you a little more liberty too.
So I'm in the middle of that project. And then I'm also in the middle of I'm going to say 14 to 15 year project. I'm like two thirds of the way through
My
making
gosh.
graduation quilts for a group of my friends, a community here who I see a lot. And their kids' first graduate was probably 12 years ago. And the last graduate's going to be in probably 5 years. And I asked all the parents of all of these kids to give me a piece of their clothing. And when the first graduate graduated 12 years ago, I thought, you know, I have to do something for these kids who I've watched grow up, right? All these parents. So I made this quilt, this throw quilt for him when he graduated high school, so for high school graduation. And then, of course, as soon as I made the first one, I knew I had to do it. You know, there's like 14, 15 kids in the whole, you know, or no, 14, 15 years, there's 26 children.
Oh my gosh, so you were committed. Once you
Yes,
start one, they all
maybe
want one.
20. But it's that idea of using a clothing that is, you know, that is indicative of somebody that is, you can remember somebody by, and these kids can take a little bit of each of us off into the world with them. And
I
it's
love
been a really
that.
beautiful, beautiful project. And
I'm sure. I'm sure. So tell me a little bit about the fabrics because you can't really use like t-shirts or can you? Like what type of fabrics work best for your type of quilts?
yeah, so there are lots of people who do like strictly t-shirt quilts, you know, where they take the graphics and they make the squares, and that's great. That's not something that I do, but I can use stretchy fabric or knit fabric. I have to back everything. I'm very particular about how my quilts are constructed, that they have to be stable and straight, and it's that math thing. So I will use, sometimes I'll just use t-shirt fabric as a color, because there's lots of great colors with t-shirts. But generally, I love men's shirts. I love any woven material that isn't stretchy. Although I will say that there was one, let's see, one commission that I did that was just cashmere sweaters. This
Oh,
woman,
wow. I
fantastic
would think that would
woman.
be difficult to work with,
I
no?
was very nervous, and I had, up to that point, I had been like, no sweaters, no tea, you know, no this, no that, no. But you know, all of these fabrics were so amazing. I just had to learn how to work with them, and so I ended up using the cashmere sweaters in an applique situation. So I took the whatever woven fabrics she had as like the base block, and then I would use cashmeres for like an applique leaf or something that I can applique, because then it's stabilized. And oh, it was a lovely quilt. And so I was like,
I'm
oh,
sure it was. It sounds beautiful. So based on everything you've shared here, it sounds like you really love working individually with people. Are there any ways in which you see yourself sharing your process and techniques with a wider audience?
Well, I've often been asked, oh, do you teach workshops, or do you teach? And I feel sometimes really pressured to do that. I have this, I think, fear of teaching. I don't know where it comes from, but
Really?
I think what it is trying to figure out, like, what is it that I'm going to teach? You know, what is it about what I do that I could teach in a workshop? I've taken workshops before, and the workshops that have been really, really great for me are ones where you learn a technique and you can apply that to what you're designing. You know, when I think about what is it that I do for people, and much of what I do is based on sort of intuition and color work and recognizing, you know, I take a box of clothing that somebody gives me, and that is my palette. I don't get to choose, you know, I'd really rather have pink here. And so I do, I would love to be able to even work, maybe even one, because I'm good working one-on-one with people. I've thought, how could I be a quilt consultant, or how is that a thing? You know,
You can
like,
make
yeah, I
it
mean, could I work with somebody who wants to make one of these quilts but just doesn't know how to get started, or, you know,
thing.
just sort of thinking through like how to approach a project like this. I would love to be able to share that with people. I've thought about maybe writing a book and sharing these quilts and the quilt stories,
Oh,
because
that would be beautiful.
what I do is very private. You know, it's
Oh,
very,
that's true.
you know what I mean? I mean, not private like people wouldn't want to share, but I can't really have a show, because I make things for people and they go to their homes, and they're really special fabrics, and I'm doing it over many, many years. And so I thought maybe a book would be really beautiful.
Yeah, sharing the personal stories. I mean, it is quite personal. And again, takes a special person to be able to not just recognize that, but work through all the emotions that come along with the materials and the quilt and the ideas. There's always a story behind it. But I think a book would be gorgeous.
I might do
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because you were saying, these like this woman Trisha that we were mentioning, how she just knew she was going to want to work with you at some point. Even I have, sweatshirts or shirts that my kids, my boys have worn that they've outgrown. One is like a seersucker suit that I put him in for a wedding, when he was 4 years old. And I just can't bear to part with it because of the memory. And so I have, a lot of these clothings, and it's just such a perfect way of creating something to still hold that memory, whether someone has passed or whether they're still very much, a part of your life or a part of your own life that you really enjoyed. And to be able to have that in one beautiful piece versus, hanging in your closet, wondering what you're going to do with it someday.
Well,
So.
what's really beautiful about these quilts is that, like you say, you could have a box of clothing, but you could take a little piece of each of those garments, and it you don't have to have the whole thing. You can have the color, or you can have just an edge of that graphic, or you can have, a strip of the stripe. And that is what you see and what your memory clicks into. It doesn't
Yes.
to be literal. And part of what I'm doing is transforming all of these pieces into a new form. And
Right.
people do have to be ready for me to cut up the fabric, and recycle the rest and
Exactly.
have that be okay. And some
Yeah.
people it's not okay, and that's fine,
Right. Yeah, I would think that each of those little squares or strips or appliques or however you end up using it, they each individually hold a little memory. So just getting back to my what I was saying about keeping my kids' clothing, it's like I don't need the whole sweatshirt. I don't need, the seersucker suit. What am I ever gonna do with that? But if I saw a little stripe of that fabric, I would exactly remember when he wore it, what day it was, where we were, and why it meant so much to me. So obviously, we know that you are a maker. I think you had mentioned earlier on, or you did mention earlier on, that your family, you come from a family of makers, and so you sort of thought you needed to veer away from that in the beginning. And I learned that there is something very unique about your background that has nothing to do with making. It has to do with flying. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh yes. I had just so I was away for a year. I did a year abroad away in England while I was in college. And actually that's where I took my first textile design class in a university in York over there, and was very excited. I came back home and was working. My mom had moved to Hood near Hood River in Oregon. And I, for some reason, I had felt like I had just, I was, I'm not a risk taker. And I thought, I just want to do something risky, but not, I don't want to take drugs or whatever, do something illegal. Anyway,
You don't want to bungee jump off the Empire State Building.
yes, I
Just.
know. And I ran in, my mom was having a structure built on her property. And one of the guys that was working on the place, he said, oh, he said, well, you should learn to fly. I just learned to fly, I just got my pilot's license. And I thought, oh, maybe I should learn to fly.
That'll tick the box for you.
Yes, it did tick the box. So at age 21, I spent a whole summer learning how to fly small aircraft in Hood River, Oregon, and got my pilot's license.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I know you have a story there. There must be at least one really good flying story that you need to share.
There is. So when you do all your hours, the first thing you have to do is do a solo flight. So it was my first solo flight, and you had to fly to a different airport that was at least 40 minutes, an hour away. So, and back then, I don't know what they're doing now, because honestly, as soon as I got my pilot's license, I was always so happy to get back onto the ground that the license has been in my wallet, but I really haven't done much flying. But this particular, so it was my first solo flight, and you have to do it by visual markers. So you look at the map, you look at the wind, you see, okay, there's this mountain range, there's the highest mountain where in this range, there's the, bend in the river here, blah, blah, blah. So I was going from Hood River to Madras, Oregon, and got everything set, and I got up flying and in the right direction. and I looked for my second marker and I didn't see it. And now what I didn't know at the time was that when you're, at 5,000 feet, those high mountains, all everything flattens out. So even though I was on the right track, I thought that I was not on the right track. And I didn't, it was like I had my map on my lap and I just was out there and I had no, I thought, well, maybe I got turned around or maybe the wind pushed me and I completely froze.
Like
Like
panic started to set in.
I was so panicked in it. But then
Oh.
you're up there and you're like, well, it's just me and it's just going to be me to get out of this situation. And I looked and saw there was no aircraft in sight. And I just studied that. I just looked down and I studied that map. And I thought, okay, well, if I'm on the right track, then soon I'm going to hit a bend in the river and there's going to be a sawmill. There was like a little square that said sawmill. And lo and behold, I looked down and there it was. And I was just like screaming in the cockpit, like by myself, like, what? And I got to Madras. You have to land and like get out and go into the little office. And I was just buzzing with adrenaline. And there was one young guy sitting there. It was nobody. And I was just like, I just thought I was gonna die and blah, 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 blah. And he was just looking at me like I was crazy.
He probably hears that all the time. He's like, yeah,
Yeah.
that's just a Thursday around here.
Well, first of all, there was not that many women that were learning to fly, let alone, young women. So I did feel a little bit odd the whole time. But it was a
Gosh.
moment where I just felt like, wow, I gotta make it happen.
Yeah, you got to put your big girl pants on and fly. That's
Yeah.
all you can do. That is very impressive and very scary. Like you said, you definitely, you ticked the box. You did something out there and brave and very daring. Are you done now? Like,
Done.
have you
Yeah.
are you finished with that side of your
No more flying. No.
no more. Okay. Do you get that like daredevil sort of intuition every few years? Is there something else you do, or is were you like, nope, I flew and now I'm finished being
Yeah,
a daredevil?
that was the peak. I peaked at 21.
I think I'm still waiting to peak. I just no. I am not that adventurous. Well, that was definitely a moment that kind of stretched you and definitely created some growth, I'm sure, not just in flying, but also personally and having to go through that moment. Flipping back now to your current career, is there any moments that really stretched you, whether it was working with a difficult client or not feeling inspired, or we all artists sort of talk about these blocks that come from time to time. But I do think that sometimes that's when we find our most successful selves, right? When we have these blockages, or when we have these moments that we feel like we're failing, or that they really stretch us. Did you have anything that happened like that with your art?
I feel like there's been moments. So I feel like I've had like three or four like pivoting moments that seemed really hard for me. The first one was leaving Nike actually, because so many people were like, that's like to get there. It's like, wow,
Like a dream job.
why would you ever leave? And for me, oh, it was so stressful and I didn't feel like I was hitting the mark in what I was creating. It was such a struggle. And I did have this other creative outlet that I wanted to focus on. And yet when you tell somebody, I think I'm gonna leave, they're like, what? So sort of these moments where I feel like people, like I was sort of going against the grain of what people were thinking, because I felt in my gut that I needed to pivot and do something that was more purposeful for me. So
Right.
leaving Nike for sure. And then doing these craft shows with my work. Some people were just, raking it in and doing really well with either pottery or, jewelry or wood turning, that kind of thing. I met some amazing people at these national craft shows that I was doing, but I was showing quilts. And quilts are more about interiors and more about people feeling like, well, I have to make sure that it matches my curtains or that it goes with what my designer's doing or whatever. And because they were higher priced items and things like that, it was really hard for people to make that purchase right on site.
Commitment, the purchase,
Yeah.
yeah.
And the longer you wait afterwards, the fewer people kind of come through and that kind of thing. And so I had to make a decision to stop doing that because it just didn't feel like it was so much work for not as much payback really for all the work I was doing. So that was another moment where I just had to just accept where I was and what I could do and where I thought my real strengths were. And the second thing I mentioned earlier in our podcast was this moment where I was wanting to get a consultant for my textile designs because I thought, it doesn't have to be textile. I'm a pattern maker. I love making patterns. And I did Photoshop classes on how to do repeat patterns and how to put together this and that. And, sent this like big email blast out to potential consultants. And not only did I not receive a like thanks, no thanks email, it was crickets,
No.
like nothing. And 2 weeks later, I got a commission to do a nine quilt memorial quilt commission from a family in Alaska. And those two
Wow.
things put together, it's like you got to listen to what's going on,
It is very true. I think sometimes we have these ideas of what we're supposed to be or who we should be or what our schooling has taught us to be. And then when we veer away from it, it's very easy to doubt yourself. It's very easy to second guess and think, well, no, this can't be right. But the more you listen to that inner voice, it sounds like the more successful you became. So that in and of itself is a really genuinely warming story.
I think self-doubt is our biggest foe, right? In this kind of work. Try to connect with what feels good in your body, what makes sense for who you are and what you want to create and what is sort of flowing, because I just felt like, wow, it's just really easy for me to talk to people about their loved ones and to receive a box of clothes that I have to work with. That's my palette. And to intuitively like create an abstract design from a story, like with it, there's just a lot. And for some reason, I don't know why, but that comes to me. And
Very easily. Isn't it funny how we often try to make things way more difficult than they need to be? You
definitely.
know? I've heard other artists say the same thing, that they were trying different techniques or different ways of making their artwork, paintings or what have you, just appear better or more sophisticated if they tried this different technique. And quite frequently, it's just whatever comes to you easiest, even though it seems simple, it almost seems too easy. Is what you're best at.
I think what has challenged me a lot in this particular type of work is marketing. I don't even want to say the word marketing because it doesn't go with what I do, right? Like people, like what I would love is for people to find me, to have a referral to, I don't want to push anyone into this work. It has to.
No, it doesn't work that way with this type of thing, right?
So that's been a challenge, really, is sort of getting the word out. So a lot of what I've been doing is maybe writing an essay about a particular story and, getting into an online literary magazine or talking to a quilt guild, or I'm about to do talk to some people in a retirement community about my work, just sharing my work. I'm not peddling, but how do
No.
I, people need to know that this is an opportunity before.
Right.
But sometimes people would say, oh my gosh, I wish I'd known, my mom died 4 years ago and I just gave everything away and I don't have anything left. And I just don't, I would like people to know that this type of work is out there.
Definitely.
And that's the challenge. So I'm always.
Yeah. Well, hopefully some magazine articles and some podcast interviews will introduce you to an audience because I do think what you do is lovely and beautiful and very, very special. And it really it can't be replaced by anything else. I mean, you have a ton of photographs of your loved ones, but to actually have something to kind of hold and that involves them and their clothing, or whatever, their bedding, their pillows, whatever reminds you of them is pretty special.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, before we kind of wrap things up, I would like to end by asking you about some advice that you've received. It sounds like you internalize things very deeply, and the work you do is very passionate. What is some advice you received that you can share with our listeners today?
I remember sitting in my grandmother's studio. My grandmother was a sculptor. first ceramics and then stainless steel.
I feel like you had no chance, Lori. No, no chance of not being an artist. Do you have all these people in your life?
Yeah, my mom's a photographer. Yeah, no chance. I tried not to do it. Yeah, I
Because
was
we were trying to
sitting.
make things more difficult, like we were talking about, right?
Yeah, I was sitting in her studio, and actually, it was the year that I was at the Fashion Institute in New York. She lived in New Jersey, and I would come, and it was an intense time. I was doing a 2-year program that was condensed into 1 year, so I was working and painting and all this. So I brought my work, and she was working in her studio, and we were just talking about making and creating. And she's a very opinionated person. She was from Austria and had this great Austrian accent. And she said, once she just came out, she's like, "You know, you should never copy anybody's work. You need to find your own voice." I don't know what I was painting at the time. I mean, in textile design, there's a lot of copying and a lot of, lifting of things. And she understood that that was part of, my training, but she said, "You need to come up with your own voice and your own aesthetic, and don't copy other people. That's very important." She told me that.
I think she'd be very proud of you because that's exactly what you ended up
Oh,
doing.
yeah, I know. She's amazing. And the other piece of advice I got was from a fellow artist. I have my art my studio at home now, but for 20 years I was in an industrial part of Portland in a big studio. And my colleague Dana down the hallway, she came in one, and it was early on in my career. I had just quit Nike, and I had maybe one or two commissions, and I finished it, and there was no work coming in. And she came upstairs, and she walked in, and I was just sitting there glum. And she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Oh, there's just nothing. I don't have anything to do." She's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "You're a maker. You have all this fabric around. Make something. You're a maker. Make something." And I was like, "Right, okay." And she gave me license to like not be like pouting or whatever, but just to keep going, keep creating. And I ended up making this amazing, I had all the scrap from my wool quilts, and I made this like incredibly intricate, amazing quilt just from her coming up and saying, just keep making.
Just
So
make
now
something.
I'm not worried about, when there's a lull, it's like an opportunity to make something new and
Right.
creative. So
It doesn't sound like there are many lulls
not
anymore.
right now.
That's great. Similarly, my grandmother gave me a really great piece of advice once when I was also in a similar spot of just, you feel sorry for yourself. You can't help it. Sometimes things go wrong and you feel sorry for yourself. And she looked at me and she said, "Okay, you get 2 minutes. You get 2 minutes. Feel so bad for yourself. Poor, poor you, poor Susan." And then she's like, "And at the end of that 2 minutes, you come up with something better."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, 2 minutes isn't that much time. I better get over it pretty quickly." But it was true. It was a good piece of advice. It's okay to have it. It's okay to be in that sad little state, but move on and make something.
There's lulls and there's highs and there's busies and there's not busies, and a lot of the challenge is managing your own approach to how you approach those times.
100%. Well, thank you so much. I felt like you shared some great insights, some great advice, and just some really beautiful stories with us today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. It was wonderful to be here.
Till next time. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today for the World of Women Create podcast. As we close the studio door on today's episode, we hope you're walking away with a little more color and a lot more inspiration. The World of Women Create is ever evolving, and we are so grateful you're on this path with us. To stay connected between episodes, visit us at womencreate.com. Until next time.